Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So today is October 1st, 2020, and we continue our contemplation on the Sandeha Nivarani written by Bhagavan. In the previous episode, we resumed our discussions on Vahini Satsang after a break of a few weeks. And we are now in Chapter 7 of Sandeha Nivarani. We have distributed our discussion on the Chapter 7 of Sandeha Nivarani over so many weeks. We have segmented the entire chapter into smaller parts, and we are now in segment 7.5. This is the last segment. And in this chapter, there is no usual question and answer session, which is typical of all the chapters of Sandeha Nivarani. Here, Bhagavan, responding to a question of the Bhakta about what one should do to become near and dear to God, what should one undertake to gain the proximity of the Lord, Bhagavan goes on to enumerate so many beautiful tenets of life, which if we practice, we will definitely become close to the divine. And we have been ruminating, we have been discussing, trying to internalize these directions and instructions given by Bhagavan. And today we are in the 44th point, 44th direction by Bhagavan. The last two episodes we spent discussing point number 43. There are a few more, so let us listen to what Bhagavan has written in segment 7.5, and then we'll spend some time on point number 44.
The Lord is understood only by the Bhakta. The Bhakta is understood only by the Lord. Others cannot understand them. So, do not get into argumentation about divinity with those who do not have devotion. Such discussions will only weaken your devotion. 43. If anyone speaks to you with wrong understanding of any subject, do not think of other wrong notions which will support that stand. However, grasp the good and pleasant feelings in them, which is its true meaning. Do not get into wrong and varied meanings which will lead to meaninglessness and ruin your ananda. 44. Cultivate one-pointedness. Do not scatter your vision to the four corners and on everything, be it a market or a crowd, but see only the road in front of you and move forward. Ensure that you take care of your body and avoid accidents. One-pointedness will become stronger if one moves about without taking one's attention off the road, avoiding dangers and having your vision not distracted with other objects. 45. Give up all doubts regarding the Guru and God. If your worldly desires do not get fulfilled, do not blame it on your devotion. There is no relationship between such desires and devotion to God. These worldly desires have to be given up some day or the other. Bhakti has to be necessarily acquired. Develop this strong conviction. 46. If you are unable to fix your mind on the sadhana of dhyana or japa, or if the desires you have entertained do not come to fruition, do not get frustrated with God. It will dispirit you even more, and you will lose the peace, however small or big, that you might have earned. When you do dhyana and japa, you should not be filled with feelings of frustration, dispiritedness and dejection. When such feelings come, take it that it is the fault of your own sadhana and endeavor to do them correctly. It is only when in your daily conduct and in all actions you automatically behave and act in this manner and along these lines that you can attain the divine principle very easily. Therefore, hold on to these maxims firmly. Chew and relish these spoken sweets distributed on the birthday festival of your Swami and be happy. Have you understood?
Your words are like nectar, Swami. In all these ordinary dealings of life, man does not know the road. He follows the wrong track and does not read the books which tell him the means of a happy journey. For all such people who are struggling like me, what you have said are pertinent points to reflect. We are indeed blessed. Bless me that these words get imprinted on my heart and are realized in practice every day. There is no good in simply listening or reading them. It is only when your grace accompanies them that we get strength. I shall take leave, Swami.
All right. Go and come for the birthday festival. There are just 7 days more, isn't it? Today is the 16th. The birthday is on November 23rd. So there are 7 days left. Till that time, let this sweetness fill and overflow your heart.
So that is how chapter 7 ends, and we have few more weeks to go before we can conclude this chapter and move on. Today we are on point number 44, as I mentioned before, and here Bhagwan is telling us, cultivate one-pointedness. Do not scatter your vision to the four corners and on everything, be it a market or a crowd, but see only the road in front of you and move forward. Ensure that you take care of your body and avoid accidents. One-pointedness will become stronger if one moves about without taking one's attention off the road, avoiding dangers and having one's vision not distracted with other objects. So Bhagwan here is stressing on cultivating ekagrata. We have to move from anekagrata to ekagrata. Anekagrata is the distracted mind. Ekagrata is that single focused mind. I'm reminded of the dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna, where Krishna is asking Arjuna, what is that bird on the tree? When Krishna asks all the other Pandavas about the target that they were about to shoot, and when Krishna asks Yudhishthira, what do you see? And Yudhishthira says, yes, I can see the bird, I can see the branches, I can see the leaves, I can see the sky behind the bird. Bhima says, I can see the bird, I can see the branches. But when it comes to Arjuna, Arjuna says, I can see only the bird. That was how focused externally and internally Arjuna was, and that is the reason why Krishna decided to make him the instrument to give the world Bhagavad Gita. So this one-pointedness is what Bhagavan is emphasizing in point number 44. Do not scatter your vision to the four corners and on everything, be it a market or a crowd, but see only the road in front of you and move forward. This is the only way we will avoid accidents in the journey of our life. We should never take our eyes off the road. That's what Swami is telling. Only then our one-pointedness will become stronger. Our vision should not be distracted with other objects. When we talk about ekagrata, when we talk about that single-minded focus, one cannot but think about the devotees that Bhagwan used to always talk about. The life of Radha was nothing but one-pointedness in action. The saga of Meera was nothing but that single-minded focus on her beloved. And what is the life of Prahlada about? Forgetting everything, in spite of all the dangers, in spite of all the challenges, to keep your mind only on the lotus feet of Hari. Look at the life of Sakubai. The Lord came down and took her form to protect her because her mind was on His form. In our times, you have the story of Saikita, the story of Professor Kasturi. In a beautiful discourse that Bhagavan gave during the summer course in Indian culture and spirituality way back in 1990, Swami begins the discourse with a lovely poem. Swami sings, one may acquire great scholarship and come out victorious in assemblies of scholars. One may be a great hero and win battles galore. One may be born as a king of kings and rule a vast empire. One may generously give away in charity gold and cows. One may be able to count the countless stars that adorn the sky. One may be able to name the innumerable species of living beings. One may be well versed in Ashtanga Vidya, the Eightfold Path of Yoga. One may be successful in reaching the moon, but there is a very big but here. Swami says, but no one can control their body and senses. All these people might boast of all such achievements in the external world, but can they conquer their mind and keep it in a state of constant introversion and unshakable equanimity? Swami says, the one who can do this is truly the master. Bhagavan goes on to say that senses and the body are interdependent. There can be no body without the senses and no senses without the body. They are inseparable. They are dependent on the other. It is like the negative without the positive, positive without the negative. Will serve no purpose when it comes to electric current, isn't it? Similarly, body without the senses or the senses without the body cannot function. And the role of senses is remarkable, Swami says. The wonders performed by the senses is simply marvelous, mysterious. It is almost like the mysteriousness and marvelousness of the divine. That is how spellbinding the senses are. Unpredictable, indescribable, strange are the ways of the sense organs, Swami says. They are subtler than the body. Although the faculties of speech, touch, sight, hearing and taste, as well as vata, pitta, kapha exist in the body, the senses exercise extraordinary control over all of them equally. Joy and sorrow, heat and cold are experienced only when the sense organs come in contact with external objects. Without the sensory objects, the senses cannot function even for a moment. All the activities of the senses are oriented towards the objects in the environment. It is not possible for us to comprehend or describe the myriad facets of sense organs and their activities. So Bhagavan begins by saying that we all know that the mind with its sense organs is the reason for the distractions that we are going through. And but Bhagavan is saying that senses are indeed remarkably awesome. It is because of them that we are able to perceive everything internally, externally. Bhagavan is setting the stage for us before he goes on to reveal the secrets of how we can have that ekagrata, how we can have that one-pointedness. We have the tools. It's a question of how do we use those tools. We might have tremendous knowledge. We can make atom bomb out of that knowledge. We can make a solution that will remove half the world of a disease. It's a question of how are we using the instrument gifted by the divine. Because our distractions are because of the senses, I thought it would be appropriate to learn, remember, understand and practice what Bhagavan has told about how to rein in the senses so that we achieve that ekagrata, that one-pointedness and avoid accidents in the journey of our life. Bhagavan in that discourse goes on to say that the senses are also called by the name matraha. Matra means measuring instruments. So why are the senses called measuring instruments? Why do they have that name? Swami says it is because it is the senses who have the capacity to determine and measure the objects around. The tongue, for example, can tell whether something is sweet or sour. The eye can tell whether a picture is attractive or unpleasant. Everything around us is understood, measured through our senses. The nose will tell us whether the smell is fragrant or foul. The ear will tell us whether it is a melodious music or a discordant one. So because the senses have this capacity to measure and determine the particular quality and characteristic of different sense objects, they are called as matraha. Bhagavan, in fact, goes on to Kathopanishad and brings into our awareness that lovely analogy of the senses being likened to the horses yoked to the chariot of the body. The senses are called as ashwa. Ashwa is horse. And ashwa literally means that which is restless. If anybody has seen a horse, they would know that a horse is known for its unsteadiness. Whether it is standing or running or sleeping, there will be something or the other in the horse's limbs which will be moving. It could be either the tail, the leg, the back, the nose, the jaw, something or the other will be constantly moving. That is why the horse is called Ashwa. It is the restless nature of the horse. And it is the same with the peepal tree. Whether there is any breeze or not, you will find the trees of the leaves of the peepal tree will constantly be rustling. There will be some little movement or the other all the time. That's why it is called Ashwatha tree. Bhagwan goes on to explain the inner significance of the Ashwamedha Yaga. Ashwa means fickle. Medha means intelligence. Ashwamedha refers to the fickle-minded intelligence. And in the Ashwamedha Yaga, as mentioned in the scriptures, and it is there in the Ramayana, Mahabharata, everywhere you have the emperors conducting the Ashwamedha Yaga. Once they are victorious in the Ashwamedha Yaga, then they are hailed as Dhimanta, or the one of heroic intelligence. Swami says, you know why the horse is part of the Ashwamedha Yaga? Because the horse that is used in the sacrifice symbolizes the fickle mind. And whoever is capable of capturing and controlling that horse is described as Dhimanta. He is the man. He is the true hero. He is worthy of combat. That is what is meant by Ashwamedha Yaga. The external achievements are so much connected to the internal victories. And that is what is so beautifully encapsulated in the acts and traditions laid down in Indian culture. So Bhagwan is saying, if you want to be a hero, you can be a victorious one only if you can control these horse-like senses. Whatever you may do, you may even win any number of awards and achievements. You might be hailed by people as an awesome artist. You could be a brilliant scientist. You could have done something which 0.0001% of the people of the world have done. Still, if you were not able to control your senses, all these accomplishments, Swami says, are worthless. Matra also has another meaning. The reason why the senses are called matra is not only because they are the measuring instruments, through them we understand and grasp everything, the degree of everything around. It is also called as matra because it indicates the limit to what can be experienced by each sense organ. God has prescribed a limit to every sense organ. The eye can only see, it cannot hear. Mouth can only speak, cannot see. Only those who use these organs according to the divinely prescribed functions, they will be acting according to the will of the divine, Swami says. But if you violate the limits, even if you can see, but there's a limit to what you see. Even if you can speak, but there's a limit to what you should speak. But if we violate the prescribed limits, then we'll be transgressing the divine will. Bhagwan says the nose, for instance, has been allotted a specific assignment of inhaling and exhaling air. And that is meant to preserve one's health and to distinguish between what is good and what is not good, what is fragrant and what is not, to ignore all those which are unhealthy for the body. But Swami says, today, people are ignoring this specific role ordained for the nose. What is man doing? Unfortunately, you have many misusing it for taking snuff, for inhaling foul odors. Now, once we are violating the injunctions which have been given by the Lord for the nose, for the use of the nose, then we commit the double offense. One, violating a divine injunction, and second, causing damage to the health. Our health, our body is a gift of the divine. And that is the reason why, as a consequence, you become prey to all kinds of diseases. So the tongue, so the senses are called as matra because they help us to measure everything. At the same time, there are limits to what they can do and how they should be used. The tongue, Swami says, has been given to consume wholesome food that promotes the health, and it is also so that we can speak sweetly, gently, give joy to others. We can communicate our inner thoughts and feelings to others. But if we are not using the tongue for such edifying purposes, if we are using it to consume drugs and narcotics, if we are using it to eat animal food, to smoke, to indulge in abusing others, that is when the violation of divine limits and injunctions happen, and that is when diseases set in. Numerous troubles come unasked into our lives. That is what Bhagwan says, accidents start happening in the journey of life. Just because you have the sense organs, you cannot use them as you please. Swami says they are like horses yoked to a chariot. You must know how to handle them properly. If you do not know how to manage the horses, then the horses will just run amok. And that is when the journey of your life goes completely haywire. You might be sent out of, you might be just thrown out of the chariot by the horses who will just go wherever they want. The horses must be in front of the chariot. But on the contrary, if the horses are placed behind the chariot, then it will only lead to dangerous consequences for the person riding the chariot, isn't it? So Bhagwan says, ekagrata will happen only when we put that effort to control these horses, which are our senses. If we feed the horses excessively, if we fatten them, if we pamper them, if we don't give them adequate work, how will the horses function? How will the horses run the way we want them to? That is what Bhagwan is telling. Ensure that you take care of your body and avoid accidents. One-pointedness will become stronger if one moves about without taking one's attention off the road, avoiding dangers and having one's vision not distracted by other objects. Swami says we are pampering the senses but not giving them any work. Bhagwan, in fact, gives the example of a man with many wives and says King Uttanapada had two wives, and because of the differences between these two wives, Dhruva had to go to the forest to perform penance, if you know the story of Dhruva. Dhruva wanted to sit on the lap of his father, and there was misunderstanding between both the queens, and that is what led to Dhruva leaving the palace, going into the forest. Swami says, even King Dasharatha, he had three wives. It is because of the demand of his youngest wife that he had to endure the exile of his dearest son Rama, and eventually had to lose his life because of the pangs of separation from Rama. Swami says, see, Dasharatha had three wives. Now imagine a person who has 10 wives, and that is what each one of us is actually going through, because we have the 5 karmendriyas, 5 gyanendriyas, 5 organs of perception, 5 organs of action, and each organ insists on enjoying objects of its own choice. That is where the problem comes. Every organ wants things what it feels it can enjoy. The nose is attracted by the smell of masala dosa, Swami says. The ear wants to hear a particular conversation on the radio. The eyes want to see that new movie. Now if everyone is particular about their own desires, that is when the mind becomes completely a muddle. The mind unable to satisfy all of these demands of the senses, like who are like so many wives, the mind gets weak, the mind gets frustrated, the mind does not know what to do. How to please all of them? How to be in peace? Swami says there is no way to find peace other than the way to control the senses. Only then man can be happy and share that happiness with others around him. So Bhagwan goes on to say, okay, how to control the senses? How to get the ekagrata? Swami says there is a method by which the demands of the senses can be reconciled and harmonized. And that is by treating both good and bad with equal mindedness. Swami gives the example of Tukaram. Swami says Tukaram was a great devotee, very gentle, very, very humble devotee of the Lord. But his wife was a very difficult person. But Tukaram, with his calmness, with his forbearance, managed to get along with her without much trouble. Because Tukaram was not someone who would retaliate word for word, tit for tat, tooth for tooth, nail for nail. He was not that kind of a person. He was an embodiment of forbearance. Swami says on one occasion, Tukaram was asked to look after a farm. So, as he was guarding this farm, there was this crop of sugarcane in that small plot of land, and when the crop was mature, taking undue advantage of Tukaram's good nature, many passerbys, they used to pluck a couple of sugarcanes and take it away with them. Finally, Tukaram harvested whatever crop was left behind, and he bundled the canes and was taking the produce home in his cart. On the way, the children of the village gathered around him and they asked, can we also have sugar cane? Everybody loves sugar cane. And Tukaram said, yes, 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 you can take. And when one kid got it, he went and told the other kids, and then slowly 3 kids, 5 kids, 10 kids, and eventually, all the children of the village started coming to him and taking away one cane from Tukaram. And Tukaram didn't have any problem. He was happy to feed the little ones. By the time Tukaram reached home, there was only one cane left in the cart. The entire cart was taken away, cartload of sugar cane was taken away by the children and the people. And when Tukaram reached home, his wife flew into a rage. She was waiting and hoping that Tukaram today at least will come back with some nice produce. Today we will have a nice feast. She readied the house and she was waiting for Tukaram to come with the bundles and bundles of sugar cane so that they all will enjoy. But when Tukaram came home, it was only one cane, the last cane which was somehow left, and she got so angry. She started abusing Tukaram, condemning him as unfit to lead a family, and she took that only cane from the cart and she was so infuriated that in a fit of anger she struck Tukaram with it. And the cane broke into three pieces, out of which two fell on the ground. The other was in her hand. And Swami says, do you know what Tukaram said? Tukaram was very calm. He said, oh, I was wondering all along the way how to distribute this cane to the three members of the family. I am glad, dear one, you have nicely solved the problem for me. The piece that is in your hand, that is for you. And now you have broken it into two more pieces. And these two pieces on the floor are for our children. In the previous session, where we discuss point number 43, there Bhagavan was saying is that we should be able to always see the good even in an adverse situation, and that is the true way of understanding the meaning of anything wrong happening in our lives. Look at the forbearance, the equanimity of Tukaramji. Swami says such qualities can be acquired only through devotion and faith. Don't feel disheartened that you will not be able to control the senses. You can. It can be done through devotion, through faith, through surrender to God. You can definitely bring the senses under control. Swami gives the example of Kabir. Swami says, look at the life of Kabir. Unlike Tukaram's wife, Kabir's wife was very devoted, very faithful, totally dedicated to serving the husband and obeying him implicitly. One day, Kabir was at his handloom, and as he was busy working, he was chanting as usual the name of Ram all the time. And suddenly he called his wife and said that, you know, one thread has snapped. So Kabir told her if she can bring a lamp, because he wanted to fix it. It was noon. And the wife obeyed the instruction of Kabir and brought the lighted lamp. And when she brought the lamp, Kabir told, oh, actually I don't need it. Please take it back. Not necessary. It is daylight, so I can manage without the lamp. Swami said, the wife quietly took the lamp back into the house. Any other wife in her position would have definitely retorted saying, have you no eyes to see the daylight? Why are you wasting my time and effort unnecessarily? Can't you think for 2 minutes before asking me to do anything? Do you think I'm absolutely jobless inside? But Kabir's wife was not like that. Silently she took the lamp back into the house without a murmur, not even a single word of resentment. Swami says, because he had such a dutiful and obedient partner, Kabir was able to develop that love for the Lord unhampered, and he expressed his gratitude to the Lord for his grace, for giving him such a good, better half. even as Bhagwan gives these two examples, Swami says, see, in one example, you have the wife who is completely supportive. And in the case of Tukaram, you have the wife who is constantly anti your devotion to God. Despite their contrasting family situations, both these saints, Tukaram and Kabir, they pursued their spiritual path equally well. And Swami tells, so it is not the environment that matters in the control of one's senses and emotions. In Kabir's case, yes, the environment was favorable, but in Tukaram's case, it was not. But did that mean that he cannot pursue the path or he will not be able to control the senses and develop that love, ekagrata, towards the divine? Swami says, it is not the environment that is the deciding factor. Environment, yeah, helps. A good environment helps, definitely. But what is of true consequence is the purity of one's impulses, sincerity of purpose, and the determination to tread on the divine path. This is what counts, Swami said. Swami gives the example of Einstein. Swami says Einstein was such a rare person who was not only a great scientist, at the same time a man of great wisdom. But unfortunately, his wife also was very uncooperative. She was not educated. She was very rude in her behavior towards Einstein. And Albert Einstein was always engaged in experiments, investigations, contemplation. He was so much absorbed in his work that he should never go in time for his food, for his refreshments. And wife used to always be after him, reminding him to have food and to do the follow the normal routine of the house. She was upset, disgusted with the behavior of her husband, and very often she used to lose her temper. One day she had served the dishes on the dining table. It was dinner time, and repeatedly she requested her husband to come and have his food, and Einstein was lost in his world of science. He paid no heed to her words, because Einstein was so engrossed that he was oblivious of the requests of the wife. And after a while, his wife became so angry. She was so enraged that she rushed to him with a jug of water and emptied it on her husband's head with a shower of rebukes to sort of wake him up from his world of science. But when she did that, Einstein was not upset. Swami says, Einstein was fully drenched, but he was not upset. He simply smiled at his wife and said, every day it used to be only lightning and thunder, but today it is heavy downpour on my head. This is how Einstein reacted. Imagine. Swami says, imagine the forbearance, the composure, the humor of Einstein, even in a provoking situation like this. Maybe any other husband would have just smashed the wife's head with that same empty jug, snatching it from her hand and saying, how dare you do this? But Einstein didn't know what is retaliation. Such was the composure of this great one. In a way, he was a sage, like the ancient rishis of our times, who were also spiritual scientists. They were scientists. They didn't do experiments. They just closed their eyes and they were able to tell us about the secrets of the universe and nature around us. So So this composure, Swami says, can be obtained. And our environment does not matter. What matters is the sincerity of purpose. What matters is our determination. What matters is how strong is our devotion. Bhagavan goes on to give more tips on how to control and tackle the senses. Swami says to discipline the senses, you should understand how the senses function. Swami gives the story of a Christian priest who was once traveling on a horse carriage. And the priest noticed that the driver was beating the horse severely when the horse was approaching a railway crossing. The priest did not like the horse being treated that way. And he took pity on the animal and he asked the driver why he was beating the horse unnecessarily. The horse is running in the normal pace and it is doing what it is supposed to do. But why at the level crossing is the driver hurting the horse? And that is when the driver explained that at the level crossing, there were some white painted stones and these stones always created a fright in the horse. And he was beating the animal because the animal was more afraid of the whip than the white stones and would therefore proceed through the railway crossing without halting due to the fear of the white stones. So, the driver had to instill the fear of the whip in the animal so that it is not cowed down by the fear of the white painted stones. And that gave the lesson to the priest that the one way we can overcome the fear and the tendencies of the sense organs, the horse-like sense organs, is by distracting it with something else. It should be diverted to another desirable thing. It should be led to another stronger incentive or disincentive. That is the only way we can prevent the senses from its crazy digressions. Swami says, suppose there is an animal that has developed the bad habit of stealthily grazing the crops in others' fields. What can you do to wean it away from the bad habit? Swami says, if you feed that animal in your cattle stall with green fodder, which is even more palatable than the field crops, then it will get used to feeding in your stall and will give up its bad habit of grazing field crops. It's the same with the senses. We can wean away the senses from our bad habits if we can successfully teach them the sweetness of good habits. The senses are often compared to animals, to pasu. Pasu means one who always looks outside, who is externally oriented, and the one who has inner vision is called Pashupati, the lord of the animals. Shiva is often referred to as Pashupati because he is the master of the senses. So once we understand how the senses work, we will know how to empower them and not become a slave of them. Swami says there are several ways of taming the senses and putting them on the proper path. If you investigate carefully about the birthplace of the sense pleasures, you will find that they have their origin only in sorrow. Because the senses always have their origin connected to sorrow, whatever you do when it comes to sense pleasure, you will see that it is always along with a tinge or a sting of sorrow. The pleasure derived from the senses is always momentary and ends up ultimately in grief. You eat a laddu, you eat a sweet. You eat one, you are happy. You eat two, you are not that happy. You eat three and you are no more that excited. You eat five, six, you are disgusted. That is what it is when it comes to senses. Very momentary, deceptive nature of the so-called sense pleasures is what we should be aware of. This will help us to develop discrimination and detachment. The best way, Swami says, is to keep the senses busy in the right way. Then there will be no trouble from them. Just like Tukaram had done. Tukaram had only good feelings, only favorable interpretation of every rude behavior and negative behavior of his wife. And that's why the senses did not stand in the way of his spiritual progress and equanimity, despite trying circumstances in his family. Kabir always was engaged in remembrance of the Lord. So his wife's behavior was harmonious and conducive to his spiritual advancement. Einstein was not bothered by the boisterous behaviors of his wife. So it is so important, Swami is telling, to harmonize our thoughts and feelings through proper sadhana. Let us not blame the environment and other persons around us for our frailties and shortcomings in the distractions that we get indulged in. Swami says there are foolish people who say that to err is human. God has given senses because senses are meant to enjoy the world. What is wrong if we use the senses? They are anyway meant to look outside. Swami says, how paradoxical and ridiculous it is to be born as a man and to behave as an animal. Swami says, some students argue and say, look at the birds, the cattle and the beasts. They are having full freedom to eat what they want to procreate and recreate the way they want, they to fly and wander as they wish. Why should man be denied such freedom as is enjoyed by these lower animals? Swami asks, what kind of freedom do the animals enjoy? They enjoy animal freedom. Animals, of course, will enjoy animals' freedom. There's nothing wrong with it. But you are a man. Why do you want to enjoy animal freedom? You have wrongly understood the word freedom. Swami says, what you should strive for is freedom from the senses, not freedom of the senses. True freedom is to control the senses and the lower self in an attempt to attain the higher self and experience the eternal bliss of the Atma. That is what is Atmananda. So in this very beautiful discourse in Summer Course 1990, given to the students, Swami is emphasizing on how to build that balance between knowledge and character so that our life does not get into the serious accidents. Swami says, students have to maintain the balance between controlling the senses and developing virtuous living. According to Patanjali, yoga is the control of the wanderings of the mind. Swami says, yeah, it is very difficult, but not impossible. Swami says, yes, it might seem difficult, but the best way, the easiest way to do this is, you just concentrate on what is good. That is enough. Then automatically you will be keeping yourself from the bad. And if you are concentrating on the good, then automatically your mind will not be weak. Swami gives the example of a foreigner by name Carlyle. Now this man was highly intelligent, but he was suffering from insomnia. So one day he called his neighbor and complained to him that he was unable to sleep during the night time because of the crowing of the cock in the neighbor's house. And the neighbor replied saying, no cock would crow throughout the night. It's only twice or thrice that the cock crows. And that he himself listens that and it does not bother me also sleep. So why can't Carl also sleep? To this, Carl's reply is that, yeah, I too know that the cock crows only two or three times during the night, but I'm unable to sleep because I'm constantly thinking of the cock and when it is going to crow. Swami says, this person was not able to sleep, not because of the crowing of the cock, as alleged by him, but it was because of his own imaginary fear of the crowing of the cock. And that is what happens to most of us. We suffer not on account of the senses, but due to the wrong imaginations and fears that we create, illusions that we build using the senses. Swami says, if you just focus on the good, everything else will be taken care of. That's what Swami said in point number 43 also, and 44, where Swami is trying to cultivate one-pointedness. Swami says, do not scatter your vision into the four corners and on everything. Ensure that you take care of your body and avoid accidents. One-pointedness will become stronger if you move about without taking your attention off the road, avoiding dangers and having your vision not distracted with other objects. And the way to not have our vision distracted and cultivate one-pointedness, apart from cultivating that surrender, that forbearance, Swami so beautifully gives those tips here and says, you just occupy the senses with the good. If you can do this, the senses will get strengthened. You will have more power in controlling the senses. You will not be driven by the senses. The senses will be driven with your Atmabalam, with the strength of your spirit, because your spirit is strengthened by your focus on the good. So dear listeners, that is one way of understanding what Bhagwan has said again and again. As you read this message of Bhagwan, so many new thoughts come, so many new insights Bhagwan gives, and there are so many ways we can internalize this. What I have shared is just one way of looking at it from one particular discourse of Bhagwan. Actually, there are so many beautiful ways of understanding and putting this into our lives. Let us do that. Whenever you have time, do spend a few minutes opening the pages of Sandhya Nivarini. And if you have any queries, anything you want us to discuss, please tell us. Praying to Bhagwan, we will hold each other's hand and go through this journey of understanding his teachings and deriving the joy of leading a life in tune with his message. It was my joy to share these few thoughts with you. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. If you want to write anything specifically to me, you can write to my email ID bishu@radiosai.org. You can send us also your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393258258. Offering this little endeavor at his lotus feet with humility and gratitude, we bring this session and the day long Thursday Life to a close. Thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to a new schedule of Thursday Live as announced before and by all my brothers who are hosting other shows. please look forward to the revised Thursday life schedule. But the Vahini Satsang continues to be at the same time, 8:30 to 9:30. But the other segments have slight change in their timings, and we are going to have a new video satsang every Thursday, 7:30 to 8:30. That is our offering, which will start from October 8th, 2020. And this video satsang will be by the members of Media Center as well as guests from various institutions of Bhagwan. So we look forward to the revised and rehashed Thursday Live programs. Thanks to Bhagwan, and we look forward to your support, to your encouragement, to your feedback to take this mission forward. Thank you so much. Sairam.